Good evening. You're listening to WNUR 89.3 FM, HD1, Evanston, Chicago. I'm Gabe Shumway, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, the environmental benefits of yard sale culture. What's next for live-action remakes? What would Northwestern students rename Northwestern? And this week's B-List, your pop culture roundup. Those stories and more coming up from Northwestern University. This is WNUR News at 6. Thanks for swinging by. While the summer season of yard sales is close to an end in Chicago, this pastime is heating up for others around the globe. Gabe Shumway has more.
There's something nostalgic about yard sales. Many people look back fondly on checking the local newspaper to find several for a Saturday morning. These sales can also be instructional, as they teach children the basics of friendly haggling. But yard sales now have a new meaning as an eco-friendly way to reduce waste and lower your carbon footprint. Holding your own yard sale can avoid wasting items that you might otherwise throw away during a move. Shopping at yard sales can help breathe new life into one-of-a-kind finds. They bring life to the saying that one person's trash is another's treasure. Yard sales don't have to be individual. They can be held at the local community level or even nationally. For Weinberg senior Abby Maggiani, her Syracuse New York High School would host sales of its own. Community members donated items that were sorted by room, with kitchen appliances in the cafeteria, clothes and toys in the gym, and even furniture taking up the hallways.
Because it would pretty much take over the entire high school.
This also served as a fundraiser for clubs, which used the profits to fund field trips. She says, however, that personal yard sales have a different focus.
You don't do it because you want to make, like, money. You do it because, I don't know, you have a lot of stuff and you want to get rid of it, but you don't want to throw it out because that'd be pretty wasteful.
Many universities have started large-scale yard sales to reduce campus waste. Departments collect donated items from students during move-out and sell them at large markdowns. Not every approach is the same, either. Northwestern University collects donated items during move-out season and donates them to local charities. But there is a certain appeal to the yard sale. The University of Richmond hosts an annual big yard sale. They partner with the local Sierra Club to put these items back in local hands.
You know, we know that it's going to be used locally instead of shipping. As you know, we try to reduce how much we ship off to Goodwill, because Goodwill, you never know if it's going to stay in Virginia or if it's going to go to some other place.
That's David Donaldson, the manager of Rethink Waste at the University of Richmond. This event has become a tradition for the local community. In 2020, it was canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. The next year, Donaldson received calls from local residents eager to hear if the event would be back. He says the big yard sale keeps these goods
in the community, keeps it out of the landfill.
While Richmond's program has united residents at the local level, there have been ongoing efforts in other cases to scale this to greater lengths. The 127 yard sale is an annual 3-day chain of yard sales that stretches 690 miles and spans 6 states. It started in the 1980s as a way to encourage visitors to travel along U.S. Route 127 and visit rural communities. The 127 yard sale's Director of Media Relations, Josh Randall, notes that this event still serves to benefit those from rural communities.
They'll collect stuff all year long and they'll sell it, and that can generate a big portion of their annual income.
He adds that there are constantly new and imaginative reuse methods at different yard sales along the route. From repurposing to do-it-yourself designs, these yard sales have something for everyone.
I don't know how people even think of this stuff, but, you know, they'll buy old items and they'll, you know, repurpose them and use them in all kinds of different ways. So it's definitely a good way to prevent things from just going to waste and ending up in the landfills.
However, the premier place promoting a resale economy isn't on American soil or in the backyard of local listeners. Australia's Garage Sale Trail happens on 2 separate November weekends in 2025. In 2023, this event had over 400,000 participants across the country and helped to extend the life of over 10 million pounds worth of items. That's enough to recreate the Statue of Liberty 22 times. This trail included over 14,000 separate sales in 2023. The group works with over 80 local councils, as well as the Government of Queensland, Australia's northeast state, and the Environmental Protection Authority of New South Wales, a southeast state. Participants can also register their sales online or view a map of other sales. According to Liz Baldwin, campaign assistant and garage sale guru at Garage Sale Trail, the Australian government emphasizes this kind of circular economy. Garage Sale Trail has worked with the government to reverse environmental damage through reuse.
I think Australia isn't special in that we've become quite wasteful as a society. So I think it's like sort of shifting back to an equilibrium where people are actually reusing and recycling their things.
Yard sales may also benefit childhood development. Children attending these sales can practice math and reading skills. They can also enhance social skills with people from different generations.
I think the more they can see that connection to real life, I think the more that it makes the classroom feel very alive to them.
That's Dr. Nicole McEninch, a clinical associate professor of child and family studies at Baylor University. McEninch says it's important to teach children about past events and objects. When her son was 9, she brought him to a yard sale. He saw a space heater from decades ago, unsure of what it was. This became a teachable moment where he learned about a relic of the past. In a world of online shopping, venturing out to a yard sale is less common. But with the impact of meeting new people, building local community, and finding ways to reduce your carbon footprint, they can be an easy way to be environmentally friendly at the local level. Baldwin noticed that Garage Sale Trail participants emphasized this community aspect.
We do a seller survey for feedback each year, and one of the things that they were saying in the latest one was that having a conversation and meeting your neighbors and being social was actually what they enjoyed most about the process.
People make the trek to yard sales for many different reasons. Community, economy, environmentalism, and more. For McEninch, yard sales are about the journey.
You're there to find what you never knew you were looking for.
For WNUR News, I'm Gabe Shumway.
With the Lilo and Stitch movie last May and Moana set for next summer, in a rebroadcast of a piece from 2025, Will Clark has delved into the topic of live-action remakes of classic animated movies.
Coming out later this week on Friday is the new live-action remake of Lilo and Stitch, yet another example of a major movie studio taking a beloved animated film and recreating it in live-action. This trend in the entertainment industry has been especially notable this year, with the recent release of Snow White, the already mentioned Lilo and Stitch, and even a recreation of How to Train Your Dragon coming later this year. This phenomenon notably started with Disney, who released their first live-action remake in 1994 with a version of The Jungle Book. In the 31 years since its release, Disney has put out 22 live-action remakes. This phenomenon has even pushed beyond Disney, with the How to Train Your Dragon recreation being one of the first similar projects to be produced out of Universal Pictures and Netflix, having released many of their own live-action remakes of animated shows such as Avatar The Last Airbender, Death Note, and One Piece. In this way, it appears that this formula has now been brought to other mainstream studios and will no longer be relegated to only Disney's classic animated films. This wave of live-action remakes is often received relatively poorly by film critics, with only 3 of the 23 released Disney remakes reaching a Rotten Tomatoes scores of 80% or higher. And online discourse around this trend in cinema has been largely negative. Complaints of a lack of originality have been at the center of discourse surrounding live-action remakes online, that Disney has been producing these films out of a lack of creativity to create new stories and ideas. That being said, oftentimes audience scores for these films are significantly higher than that of the critical scores, with 2023's Little Mermaid, for example, only having a 67% critical score, but an incredibly high 93% audience rating. This begs the question of whether these films are genuinely unpopular with the public, or if there is a silent majority of people who will continue to see these films. This idea has been supported by the monetary success of these live-action remakes, with even a few of them, such as Beauty and the Beast, making over $1 billion on a budget of just $160 million. But with the recent flop of Snow White, which cost Disney $270 million to make while only receiving $202 million at the box office, the question of the validity of these remarks is being raised once again. The only way to answer such a question is to ask the average film enjoyer what they think about live-action remakes, and these were two of their answers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they are not infrequently just cash grab to play on the nostalgia of the original IP, right? So they're a way of putting in not much budget and getting a lot of money out of people who are desperate to go see some more media from their favorite series. And I think they have potential if they were actually made to be good products, but in my opinion, a lot of them just end up being cash grabs, especially those by Disney, in my experience. And maybe someday people will, like some group will actually like try to make effort and like do justice to the original with one of these adaptations, and then I'd be happy to go watch it. But I think ideally now people start voting with their wallets, right?
The only problem I have with live actions is the creativity aspect of it. And I literally just think of it as of like a future generation problem, in that obviously we grew up being, we meaning Gen Z, we grew up on these old Pixar movies like The Incredibles, Monsters, Inc. And if they start trying to recreate those, I feel like it's not adding anything. We need like new ideas, and like the movie industry has become find something that worked in the past and remake it. But I feel like we just need to like move forward. Like obviously, I mean, it's good to take inspiration from different movies from the past, but I think we just need new ideas.
Whatever the verdict is among the common moviegoer, it seems that this trend is not slowing down, with a live-action remake of Moana coming out next year, and several other remakes in the works with unannounced release dates such as The Aristocats, Hercules, and Bambi. Perhaps the release of Lilo and Stitch later this week will provide more of an answer for if this trend will continue into the future, but for now, it seems like a fair guess to say that despite their often negative depictions, live-action remakes are here to stay.
Northwestern University has carried the same name since 1851, but what if students got to rename it today? WNUR News' Dara Simibankole hit campus to hear some creative suggestions and learn where the name actually came from.
Go, you Northwestern, break right through that line. With our colors flying, we will cheer you all the time. You rah, rah.
Northwestern University. The name is iconic, if also a little geographically misleading. So we hit the campus walkways to ask, if you could rename this place, what would it be?
I'm here with Onini Ohonaka. If you had the ability to rename Northwestern, what would you rename it?
North Central.
Hi, I'm Isaiah Thomas. If I had the ability to rename Northwestern, I would rename it as Wonderland. Every time I come on this campus, I see some more exotic out of this world stuff. Like, we have castles, we have some nice overly grown trees, we have a lake that's filling. I don't know, it's like, it's pretty interesting.
I'm here with
Catherine Ndovu.
Okay, if you had the opportunity to rename Northwestern, what would you rename it?
I would rename it Lakeford, playing off of Stanford, because we are next to Lake Michigan, and I feel like the lake is a really defining part of our school.
With homecoming weekend coming to a close, many alumni grace the Northwestern campus. So what did they think about renaming the school?
I'm from the class of 1985, and I just came up with a new name. I would call it THE University, just capital T-H-E, because it's the best school in the country, and it's gorgeous, it's right on the lake, I mean, you can't beat it.
And for others, such as Scott Remery from the class of 1985, renaming Northwestern wasn't something he wanted any part of.
Since I grew up in Maine, this was Western for me. This is the westernmost place I'd ever been when I first came here. And it's in the north, I think. So Northwestern, it is for me. Purple and white and black and go Cats.
The same goes for Thomas Massey, also from the class of 1985.
What would I rename Northwestern? I wouldn't, because I don't like all the new names for things that are just made up and fun-sounding things. I love the tradition of Northwestern and look fondly back on my time here and have no interest in renaming it.
But then Massey had a change of heart.
After giving this question a little more thought, because it's an interesting question, thinking the Q after Quacum Sunt Vera.
But where did the name Northwestern actually come from? Northwestern historian Kevin Leonard attended Northwestern himself, graduating in 1977 with a degree in history. He explains how the university got its name in the first place.
So the founders of Northwestern University wanted to plant the flag in higher education for the Methodist Episcopal Church in the rapidly growing city of Chicago. Why they chose that name, they could have called it
Chicago Methodist, Illinois, Northern Illinois. In the mid-19th century, the area that we know as the Middle West, most of that was known as the Northwest. That's the heritage of American history, the old Northwest territories. The name doesn't make sense today because we should be Midwestern University, right?
And to sophomore Jonah McClure, this is in fact right.
I would rename it Midwestern University because it's more locationally accurate than Northwestern, as we have more country than we did at the time of the creation of the university.
Northwestern has stood the test of time until today, with little to no debates about changing the name. However, at one point in time, during the Great Depression, a union with a nearby school was heavily considered.
There was a proposal to merge Northwestern University with the University of Chicago. And had that happened, there would have been some changes. But it didn't happen, so here we are. We've remained Northwestern.
Many also confuse Northwestern with other similar-sounding schools, including Northeastern University in Boston.
There was a Northwestern College not far from here. Name has been changed. There's Northeastern University in Boston that people who are not paying attention to the spelling or whatnot will often confuse Northwestern with. And Northwestern Louisiana, there have been lots of Northwesterns.
And what would historian Kevin Leonard rename it if it was up to him?
I would name it Leonard University after myself. What would you call it?
That's a question for you listeners. If you had the chance to rename Northwestern, what would you rename it? For WNUR News, I'm Darisman Ben-Colley.
It's time for the first B-list of the school year. Ella Barnes is here to fill you in on everything pop culture you might have missed this past week.
Welcome to the B-List, your weekly roundup of celebrity mess and pop culture. This week, new music from Taylor Swift, the SNL season 51 premiere, and Jane Goodall's passing. Stick with me. The Life of a Showgirl, Taylor Swift's 12th studio album, debuted on Friday, October 3rd, to mixed reviews. While there's praise for her return to upbeat pop and a lighter tone after last year's The Tortured Poets Department, the reaction is far from unanimous. Critics are calling the album fun and lyrically sharp, but many say it falls short of the high bar set by 1989 and Reputation. British outlets in particular are unimpressed, with The Guardian labeling it, quote, dull razzle-dazzle, end quote. And the Financial Times saying the promised pop sparkle just isn't there. Even the more positive reviews note the album's unevenness, suggesting that while Swift is clearly having fun, Showgirl may be more a flashy detour than a pop masterpiece. Saturday Night Live opened its 51st season with the recently announced Super Bowl halftime headliner, Bad Bunny, as host. In a bilingual monologue, the star poked fun at the right-wing backlash to his halftime gig, joking that even Fox News was happy for him before SNL cut together a spoof montage of conservative anchors praising his music. The new season arrives amid major cast turnover, with longtime performers Heidi Gardner and Ego Nwodum among those exiting, and several fresh faces stepping into 30 Rock. Trailblazing primatologist and conservation icon Jane Goodall has died at age 91, the Jane Goodall Institute announced. She passed away of natural causes while on a U.S.-speaking tour in California. Goodall's decades of field work in Tanzania fundamentally changed how he viewed chimpanzees and human-animal connections. As tributes pour in globally, her legacy lives on in her impassioned advocacy for animals, the environment, and youth empowerment. That's all for today. Tune in next week to hear what happens this week in pop culture. For WNUR News, I'm Ella Barnes.
Now for a brief look at the forecast. Today's showers will remain on and off through tomorrow morning, around 9 a.m., but with the departures of the showers comes the departure of the heat. Temperatures will drop into the low 60s over the next few days. Now taking a look into the headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe. Select Northwestern students have yet to complete the mandatory bias training. These students face discontinuation, but the exact number of students is disputed. Northwestern claims the number is fewer than three dozen, while The Guardian reported on September 27th that the number was at least 300. The Chicago Cubs will face the Milwaukee Brewers on the road tonight in Game 2 of the National League Division Series. Milwaukee took the first matchup 9-3. The CDC adopted new guidelines today that require a consultation with a health professional before receiving a COVID-19 vaccine. Over the weekend, Egypt reopened the tomb of Amenhotep III after renovations that lasted more than 20 years. The tomb was first discovered in 1799 for the pharaoh who ruled until 1350 BC. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at WNUR News, and Instagram at WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Sophia Kesa, and our reporters are Will Clark, Darasimi Bankole, Ella Barnes, and myself. I'm Gabe Shumway. Catch our next newscast Wednesday, October 8th. Now, back to scheduled programming.